it's out of here. Home run, Lenny Dykstra.
Stairs rips one into the night. Deep into right. Way out of here.
The Phillies win the game on a base hit by Mitch Williams at 4:40 in the morning.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out. It's wacky. Wonderful. Bunch of throwbacks has won the National League pennant.
Welcome to this week's episode of Continued Success. I am Justin Clue, head guy at The Good Fight, and with me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. Happy Friday, Liz.
Happy Friday to you, Justin. It's been a long week.
Yeah, it sure has. Liz, I mean, it's more fun. It is more fun, I feel like, to talk about baseball at this point. It wasn't for so long, and I think we're really hitting our stride. Since certain events took place, I feel like it's just a much easier topic to discuss. We certainly talked about it on the Dirty Inning this week. We talked about a Phillies game from 1930 that was particularly entertaining. And I was on Philadelphia Sports Table podcast, and that was, I had a lot of fun doing that. You are, of course, over at Yahoo Sports, dealing with the ebb and flow of the baseball preseason as well. So it's just, I don't know, it's just a more fun, there's a more fun atmosphere. And I don't think we need to talk about why, because we both know why. But I don't know, do you feel like it's less of a chore to discuss the sport that we both care about passionately enough to embrace as a profession to a capacity?
Well, I mean, now we can actually see the future. Like, instead of waiting for it to happen, we actually, you know, it's all together now. And baseball's so much closer. It's so close. It's March. We're springing ahead this weekend. Stupid daylight saving time.
Yeah, and I gotta say, I think my head is clearer. My focus is a little better. Liz, you'll be shocked to learn that this week on this week's episode of The Dirty Inning, I actually realized afterwards that I had failed to introduce myself or my co-host, Dr. Trevor Strunk. So for any new listeners, we were just a pair of mystery men with sexy dulcet tones relating the history of a bad Phillies loss like any sexy man would. But yeah, that's undeniably true. That there's just a sense of freedom, a sense of free spiritedness about baseball and talking about it right now. Pleasantness, I would say, that just wasn't there before, unless of course you are talking to a fan of the Washington Nationals, which again I was saying before we started recording, I really don't mean to harp on Nationals fans. I'm not. Oh, pun not intended. But I do. I will not stop enjoying it when we do mention the emotional fallout of Bryce Harper signing with the Phillies, a team Nationals fans consider very much, I guess, their rival or just a. Is there a word for maybe not rival, but they just hate us more than other teams' fans? Or maybe it's just their vitriol is at us right now for obvious reasons. But it seems like it's been very unbecoming for Nationals fans. And we talked about this on Hidden Season. We talked about the comparison of when Jason Wirth went from the Phillies to the Nationals. And now, of course, we compared that to fan reaction of Bryce Harper going from the Nationals to the Phillies. And obviously, there's been some differentiations in context there. But someone pointed it out to me today that and I felt like this was an interesting enough of a beat in this subplot to mention out loud that, you know, people went crazy. Well, not crazy, but it at least was a talking point when Bryce Harper had his press conference in Clearwater after signing with the Phillies and accidentally said, bring a title back to DC instead of Philadelphia. You know, that was something for people to jump on, but you know, it didn't really get any legs because obviously, you know, he played there for 8 years. You know, that makes sense. As I pointed out, Drew Holiday did that when he went from the Sixers to the Pelicans at one point. Like it's something that happens. However, you know, on the other side of that, Bryce Harper, you know, he's played in Washington for 8 years, face of the franchise, face of baseball, major star, MVP of the National League. He was a rookie of the year. He was a known entity at least. And certainly the, you know, probably the base, the ball player of Washington of that era. Like they had some great players, surrounded him with some fantastic, with a fantastic roster that went on to win no playoff series, but they did. He was unarguably like they drafted him. They watched him come up through the farm system. They watched him play in Washington for 7 years, sorry, not eight, and was an all-star six out of those 7 years, including his rookie year. I mean, you know, this was a guy who delivered some of their most electrifying moments, and he was their guy, which is why, again, we pointed out on Hittin' Season why this would be so hurtful to see him sign with a team that's so hated by Washington in the Phillies. But the thing that someone pointed out to me today was that there wasn't really a full page ad taken out. There wasn't really, I mean, we're not even, there was no full page ad taken out by Bryce Harper saying like goodbye to Washington or Nationals fans. But I mean, I think we're beyond newspaper story. I mean, that I think we're at like billboard territory when you talk about the impact he had on, he made the Nationals relevant, I would say, even before he was a major league player. It was like, oh, the Nationals are the team that is so bad. They get to draft this guy that everyone's obsessed with. He's one of the only guys I feel like in recent memory who came up through a farm system with all this hype and then actually delivered on that hype and became the player that everyone said he was going to be. I mean, he sort of defined the Nationals franchise, I would say. I don't think that's debatable. And yet, there, as far as goodbyes go, I believe the closest thing we got was an Instagram post he put up that was about, you know, close to 100% an image of his own back wearing a Nationals jersey, you know, on the field, waving at fans who were like out of focus in the frame. And that's about as close as we got to a farewell, a high profile farewell from Bryce Harper to the Nationals. Maybe it's coming. Maybe he's got something big and crazy in the works. And if he does, I mean, that's, I'm not trying to rob them of that. I think that's a pretty normal thing to do, which is why it's so surprising that it hasn't happened yet, given the impact he made on Washington and the amount of fans he should have in that town. But I don't know, Liz, I mean, maybe he's just, do you think it's a matter of he's seen the reactions to this trade and like how dumb and awful people have been about it in Washington? Or do you think like leading up to this point, maybe his treatment at the hands of Nationals hasn't been that great and we just haven't been paying attention?
It seems like we're sort of past the point where he can really do anything. I mean, he signed with another team. That would have been the time, you know, when the Nationals were completely out of it, you know, the day after would have been the time for the ad. You know, for the ad or the billboard or whatever it is. Like, we're way past the point where he can really do anything. He clearly doesn't want to. I think in the end, there is no love lost between him and the fans. I mean, it's hard to tell. I don't like painting with such a broad brush across, you know, an entire fan base, because I know Nationals fans who are dedicated and devoted, and I know ones who are dicks. We all do.
Do you know them? I was just going to say,
I don't actually know any Nationals fans.
I would like some names.
I do know Nationals fans. I have Nationals fans that I know and that I cherish dearly. But I don't. I'm sure there are dick Nationals fans out there. But
oh, we know there are now. They've made themselves very, very aware, very present the past couple of weeks. Anybody who is in any sort of radius of Bryce Harper online or Bryce Harper news online, you have seen someone reach out with something that you got the opposite of well-wishing, I guess. Or, you know, well, we don't have to even go over all the different ways Nationals fans have said, you know, that either whether it's being mad at him for taking the money and going to Philadelphia or rejecting the Nationals offer or that he wasn't that good to begin with or that the Nationals are actually better now without him, or just like being extra mad at Philly and Philly's fans for signing him. I mean, you know, we now know that there are plenty, and we've always known that there are plenty of terrible people in every fan base, but the terrible Nationals people have been out in force since the Bryce Harper signing. And it stands out, you know, it does, because you're right. It feels like at this point it would be because someone noticed that he had not done it.
And I think it's also in part because it didn't seem like he was on good terms with, you know, the front office when he left. You know, they made him that offer that he turned down, and we found out after the fact that was the only offer they made, and it had like an insulting amount of deferred money. like an insulting amount and an amount that was so large that it made Major League Baseball uncomfortable. The Nationals are the only team that does this. The Learners are low-key the cheapest team in baseball. You know, at least like the Athletics don't try to hide it. The Nationals, like the Learners, try to hide how cheap they are. They wouldn't pay an extra couple hundred thousand dollars to keep the Metro open later during the playoffs, which put a lot of people out.
Liz, what do you think about, speaking of the Nationals and ways to save money, what do you think about the Nationals banning backpacks at Nationals Park this year, but then a couple of days later announcing that they'll allow you to rent a locker in Nationals Park during the game? I wonder if those two things, do they have anything to do with each other, do you think?
Well, the Nationals said that they weren't making any money off of this. When they weren't making any money from the rental of the lockers, which I'm guessing is true. But they're not letting the locker company use that property outside of Nationals Park for free. They aren't making money off of it. They're banning backpack. I mean, it's like insulting to the fans, because a lot of the people who come to games are business people who come from work, and they're carrying laptop bags, and now they all have to leave. Like it's a shocking number of people who do this. You know, I mean, and they say that, you know, diaper bags and backpacks are fine, you know, that type of thing. But how many people are really going to realize that? It's just really alienating and for no reason. And I have a feeling that there are ballparks who are about to partner with the shockingly disturbing security company. They're partnering with Major League Baseball on biometric ticketing. And my guess is that we're like one step away from, quick entrance. You're already screened. You know, you can bring in backpacks if you have this pass. Pay extra.
Priority luggage boarding for Nationals.
Exactly. Exactly. People who listen to this podcast, resist this. I know it seems nice, but I'm telling you, this type of thing is bad. They're like, you can have your ticket scanned by facial recognition. How about no? How about really just fuck no?
Won't that be fun?
I don't. Like, Madison Square Garden has started using facial recognition without the permission of people who enter the building. They use, like, I wrote about this at Yahoo last year. They use lists of terrorist watch lists that are enormous and outdated, because they're not directly from the government anymore. It's all very disturbing. And like, I feel like stuff like this is pushing us towards it, because you know that there's some kind of end game in mind.
Yeah. And you wonder what that end game is if you let your mind wander, but I would,
all of the data. They want all of our personal data. They want to know everything we're thinking at all times.
Well, if anything, we know too much of what certain people are thinking, thanks to spending all day on platforms like Twitter, and yeah, that is unfortunately where we've interacted with most of the. It's just been a lot of really negative interactions with Nationals fans this week, and I guess that's to be expected. But part of the reason might be just because they're still prickly that their guy left, chose to leave. Their team didn't do a whole lot to keep him. They didn't really get a whole lot done while he was there, and he didn't really say goodbye on his way out. So
it's almost, with the exception of got nothing done while he was there, it really is exactly like Jason Worth. Because Twitter was a thing when he left. It wasn't like it is now, but people were angry that he left. They were angry. You know, I think they did the same thing, because he wasn't our Bryce Harper, but he became a star with the Phillies, and he was so important to 2008 that, you know, when he left and right before 2011 too, it was very sad and angry. People were super, super, it wasn't sad. It was terrifying. Everyone was so angry about it. So, you know, it's interesting to see the tables turn, and it'll also be interesting for these two teams to be good at the same time.
Yeah.
The Phillies and Nationals have not been good at the same time ever. And I think this could be, to the extent that their fans give a shit, this could be a good rivalry. You know, like, I have my doubts that the Mets are going to be everything the Mets think they're going to be. But, you know, that would also be fun. I want a good rivalry. I want, you know, let's have angry fan interactions in the stadiums. Let's get back to that. Let's get back to the time where I had to be held back from telling off a dude wearing an unrelated Chipper Jones jersey to a Phillies Mets game at
Yes, let's get back to that. Absolutely. No, I mean, there's equal. I was like, oh, do we really want that?
And then
it's like wondering, do we really want that? But then you go to a stadium where stuff like that isn't happening, like any stadium, the Phillies, well, you know, any game in the Phillies stadium the past couple of years, and you're just like, yes, any alternative to this would be great. So let's try that again. It is kind of wild. I was thinking about this today that, like, you know, if you're a kid who was born so that you were old enough to be cognizant of the last 7 years of Phillies baseball, like you're born in the Delaware Valley area. That's some, you know, that's a curse some of us have just had to live with our whole lives. And so the sports you were brought up on have been Philadelphia sports. And so, like, maybe as soon as you got into sports and paying attention to your local team that's always being broadcast, it happened to be the last 7 years of Phillies baseball. But even in the grand scheme of it, I mean, it's tough for me to sympathize that much, because you wouldn't be able to call that child long suffering. Because even if this team is bad, they signed Bryce Harper. I mean, it's tough to really verbalize the astronomical implications of that and the big deal that it made out of the Phillies. It makes the assumption that they're going to be at least better, very safe, and something of a, I don't want to say a guarantee. I feel like I'm in a bad space right now to be really risky territory. I'm just gonna real quick throw out my laptop and start over with a new identity. Hang on. But you know what I mean? It's like 7 years. They talked about when the Phillies won the World Series in 2008, it was 25 years since any team had won a pro sports championship in Philadelphia. There are plenty of, it was two championships in 122 years or something. You know, there have been longer stretches of not winning anything in just Phillies history, let alone all of Philadelphia sports history. So we talk about, oh, it's been a long time since we've seen a team like this. And yeah, it certainly has. 7 years is a notable chunk of time. But also in the, you know, we always talk about Philadelphia being a city that loves to lose, or whatever the hell that means. It's just, it's not that much time. Honestly, like, we can remember the last, you know, you and I still are doing this, and we were doing this the last time the Phillies were, you know, winning and being good. Not literally this, but, you know, podcasts weren't really a thing at that point. But, you know, it was 10 years ago about, and, you know, I'd say we're doing it better now, but we're still kind of in similar positions. We haven't moved on to, you know, retire or find another phase of our lives. So it was recent.
Keep talking about this, because this is in no way about us and our failure to move on.
You know, we're still in our same spot, looking in the mirror every day, wondering what happened, seeing another gray hair and another gray hair in our beards, and wondering if it's even worth it to tweeze it out or just lean in to the wave of aging that is clearly waiting for us just around the corner, and going into work and thinking, oh, another day, another dollar, another irreplaceable chunk lost from a quickly passing life. Liz, I mean,
death comes for us all. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
You think young fans think about this kind of stuff? I don't know. I'll throw to you.
No.
I'll throw to you, hit mute on the microphone, and weep quietly into my hands.
I don't even know what to say to that. My God, man.
I don't even know what I was going.
No, I was like, what were we talking about at some point?
I think I was.
That it wasn't a very long time since the Phillies have been good, and you're correct, it hasn't. But it has, as the person who ran the good fight for the entirety of that time.
Have I not been doing it for 5 years? Oh, no, just the off season where we were waiting for Bryce Harper to sign? I see.
Yeah, you don't get to complain at all.
Oh, I was just making an observation.
The biggest free agent they signed during my time was Jake Arrieta, and that happened less than a year before I left.
Yeah, some of us just fall ass backwards into success, I guess.
You missed running the blog in the era of Ty Wigginton and Aaron Harang.
Juan Pierre. Yeah, but this is we don't have to do a year by year breakdown of players who aren't on the Phillies anymore. That also is resurfacing as a fun trend.
It's one of my favorite things to do. Yes. I love it.
I think it's a great way for people to remember everything we've been through up to this point before we had what, like 3, 4, 28 to like all-stars from last year on the roster. Like, yeah.
Wow. This is a team and a half now.
And you know, today I tweeted out a perfectly innocent question asking people for just one image they treasured or popped into their heads when they thought about the Phillies from 2012 to 2018. And, you know, some people misunderstood the question. Some people sent me videos, which technically, yes, that's an image, but, you know, not a single image. It's many images moving together. And some people gave me images just not from that time frame, from, you know, their favorite Phillies moment. They just thought that was great. I was like, yeah, hey, more happiness. The world could use more positive vibes like that. That's great. And some people sent pictures of themselves with their family, and like that was great. Loved seeing those. But I wanted to do a quick rundown actually of a lot of the images I saw, because there were definitely some repeaters, which you would expect. But, you know, when I asked what was everybody's favorite single image from the 2012-2018 Phillies, you know, I tried to get the ball rolling by finding some great shots of Odubel, because, you know, he's been here a while now. He's one of the longest tenured Phillies. And I got a couple of favorites of him. Him where he's like celebrating and he looks like he's being electrocuted because his firecracker hair is all standing on end. Of course, I'm looking at them now.
This is excellent. This is the best idea you've had. Wow.
doing a very stoic, statuesque bat flip. I got a shot of Clayton Kershaw right after Aaron Altair hit the grand slam, the only grand slam he's given up at that point, off of him. And I got the gif of Ben Revere doing that crazy war stomp across home plate when I think Ryan Howard hit a walk-off home run at some point in that era. But, you know, I was really impressed with how this caught on. And it also, like I said, it really served as a great reminder of how far we've come. Because, you know, somebody tweeted a picture of Grady Sizemore at me trying and failing to catch a pop-up. And I did not know who that was in that picture. I had no idea. But we got some gems like Darren Ruff, a gif of Darren Ruff swinging and missing at a pitch that bounces 1 foot in front of and to the left of home plate. The Fransky in LA account was, of course, a gold mine. He just emptied his the folder he most assuredly has on his desktop full of images from that era. We got so many shots of the bullpen phone of Bob McClure waving the white flag, which I still consider to be the perfect like middle rock bottom downtime of this entire era. That defines so much in a single image. Got a couple of wet shots of a soaking wet Nick Williams celebrating.
Oh, yeah.
Got a Pat Burrell holding a purse for some reason and firing the hot dog cannon off the back of the Fanatics four wheeler. Got a couple of Andrew Knapp doing that crazy dance in the dugout with his arms. Oh, yeah. That was him. And then, you know, you got a couple of winners, really positive moments. Larry Boa screaming "fuck you" at Robles on the Mets because he quick pitched somebody.
That was so good.
I wanted to talk first with you about obviously the Cole Hamels no hitter was fresh in your mind because, you know, I talked on Philly Sports Table podcast about how the thing that stuck out most about the Bryce Harper signing was just the unlikeliness of it all aligning, not just the deal itself, but that the Phillies were even, you know, set up to be able to be part of the deal, everything that just kind of led up to it. It just being a Philly fan seems so unlikely, but you want to talk about stars aligning in an unlikely fashion. Cole Hamels throwing the first no hitter of his career in Wrigley Field, in his last start as a member of the Phillies on your birthday. If correct me if I'm wrong,
That's correct.
One on a play where Odubel Pereira basically took a dirt bath in the middle of catching a fly ball. I mean, you want to talk about unlikely. that was probably about as unlikely a moment as you could get at that point. And someone, one of the first images I got after tweeting out this request, other than, you know, a shot of Jeff Francoeur on the pitcher's mound with his pitching stats next to him, which was fantastic, was a shot of Carlos Ruiz, Ryan Howard, and Cole Hamels all hugging each other on the pitcher's mound after that had happened. And I think that's low key and overlooked. Well, we tend to overlook the positive moments from this era because they just feel so few and far between. And I got plenty of very hilarious, terrible moments from the past couple of years, a couple of blasts from the past as far as players go. But that was one of the more heartwarming images, probably the most heartwarming image I saw after making this request, because it really was probably like the last time that any members of that core got to celebrate on the field together. Because I was like, wow, I can't believe, yeah, there were still three of them on the team at that time. I mean, was Chase Utley still on the team at that point as well?
Yes, yeah. He was still on the team. He would be traded after the waiver deadline that year.
Right.
Or maybe it was 16.
So it was, I think it's still true that it was the last time they got to celebrate together, but yeah. Those three, just seeing those three on the mound, it was just, you know, it warmed the cockles of my heart and made me realize that, yes, we've had some pretty long, boring, bad stretches of baseball in the last 8 years, but there have been there's a sparkle or two of good moments. And before we talk about all of them, I wanted to talk about that one because I know it's special to you.
That's a great one. That's one of the best moments of my time, running the good fight. That, you know, the night Cole Hamels signed his extension, because at the time I thought that meant he was going to be a Philly forever.
Fools. We were such fools to think anything lasts forever.
Yeah, giant moron I was. But that's a really great moment. I can't think of another moment off the top of my head. Like when you say name the best moment from that shitty period, that's it. That's the single best moment you're going to find. That's the most meaningful in general. Cause it was, you know, the end of his Phillies career, at least for that time.
I would say another moment that rivals that just on by sheer fun factor was the Craig Kimbrell mocking behind home plate, which I can't believe hasn't become a thing everywhere. I was
back in the NL East. It will happen.
I
will do it again. I want it to happen.
That was one of the only times in that era that I was excited to be a part of Phillies baseball. That was just, that was some of the most fun you had at the park during an era where there wasn't a whole lot of fun to be had. That was amazing. And somebody tweeted that as well. Someone else sent a shot of a couple of people, actually three, four repeats of this was Cameron Rupp receiving a throw from Tyler Goodell to end the game on an outfield assist against the Reds. And I mean, Cameron Rupp, I haven't thought about him in a while, obviously, because he's not with the team anymore, but he was here for a while, enough that the Phillies were using him in like marketing materials and stuff. He did a lot of work with the Philly ASPCA, and, you know, didn't really ever put up the numbers that made you think, all right, Cameron Rupp, not only that he hadn't figured it out, but he couldn't even really put up the numbers that made you think he would eventually figure it out, unfortunately. And I don't mean to like poke fun at the guy, because I actually liked Cameron Rupp a great deal. I liked how like enormous he was. And this moment where he got absolutely trucked on this play, but held onto the ball is just like that's why he is that big. Like that's what he's absorbing a hit like that. And it was just such like a cool baseball moment back before those rules got all confused and baseball didn't know how to enforce itself. And it's just a mess. But Cameron Rupp, I mean, you know, I responded to that image and said, like, you know, there's not a long-term solution, but he was a great, just like ball player, not in the sense that he played baseball extremely well, but in the sense that he just, you know, he knew how to take a hit like that. And I could see him just absolutely owning a 40 and over beer league softball situation in the years to come. But I don't know. I mean, Cameron Rupp, like, do you have any precious memories from the Cameron Rupp days?
I mean, other than, you know, just sort of the memory of him always being there. I know he had some big hits. I don't know if he ever had a walk off, but that image of him staring down the ball in his glove is one that, you know, once I saw it, I'm like, oh man, I remember that. That was so good. That was so good.
I also liked, somebody sent me Miguel Cabrera, and I forgot about this, giving Jeremy Hellickson a thumbs up after striking him out because he just liked the pitch. Yeah. So he was like, respect. But he's also, he did it in like the he hadn't even finished swinging. The bat is still like extended out of his other hand, and he's just giving him a thumbs up with his other hand. God, I love Miguel Cabrera. That was such an awesome player. But yeah, it's just it was a great trip down memory lane, I guess you could say, especially when somebody put up a screen cap of a trade comparison of the Jonathan Papelbon, Nick Pivetta trade with the Nationals. Where
I just passed that one by.
Yeah. That one was pretty excellent. And, you know, if this does become a full on rivalry between the Phillies and Nationals in the coming years, I wouldn't say they should be more upset about that, but that'll be another nice little dagger to stick in their side when they're complaining about Bryce Harper.
Oh, here's one that I love. This is a God. Look at the faces on this. This had to have been from 2013. It looks like a Ryan Howard walk off. He's coming home, and Chooch is like crouching in front of the plate, and Papelbon is behind him with his hands on his breast, like, and they both look demented. And there's John Mayberry, Don Brown. You can see part of Darren Ruff's face. Cliff Lee is there. There's Cesar Hernandez, old man Cesar Hernandez,
who's just been alive forever. You know, he's actually
pretty much like I'm like he was on the 2013 team. My God,
wow. Yeah, you forget a lot of these guys are pretty long tenured Phillies at this point. It's wild that some of them are still around. Oh, I have a soft spot for Chase Utley half doing the bullhorns after getting on base, just like so reluctantly, not even looking up and making eye contact with anyone, just kind of like, I'm doing it.
I guess I have to do it.
My body hurts. I'm part of the team though, so I won't let these guys down. Yeah, of course, Michael Franco bat flip, Pat Burrell's Instagram doing a slip and slide while holding a drink in his hand, Ben Revere doing a handstand, Ben Davis trying to do the backpack kid dance, and of course the Paul Boyer Go Phillies tweet with a face down. I think it's Jeff Francoeur at spring training.
That's beautiful. Oh. I like the Galapagos gang in the booth, and that's a gift that I have on my toolbar, the tongue whack, mm-hmm. the yeah. Of whatever that thing
for
is.
Some reason has not been scrubbed off the internet yet. Yeah, that still exists out there. Odubel Herrera doing the Titanic cam when they cut to him because he's a fan favorite. It's impossible to dislike this man. Of course, we had the squirrel diving into the Phillies dugout and Chase Utley making the weirdest face. And yeah, we'll just close the loop on this with, I got to mention Rhys Hoskins having the wherewithal to hit a home run and while doing the home run trot, reenact the Philly special play with the first base coach. That is absolutely absurd. I mean,
I totally forgot that happened. And now that you've reminded me, it's one of the greatest things to ever happen in the history.
It's low key. It's not even like they had to go back and show it for me to believe that that actually happened. Like that's ridiculous.
He did the carry in front. Like it was perfect.
I don't know what school he attended to learn how to be likable, but he must have just absolutely, he must have graduated first in his class because he just knows all of the tricks. And we'll close the loop on this with just the shot of Charlie Manuel walking out of Citizens Bank Park with the Wawa bag in his hands. I mean, that is Jersey Josh tweeted that at me and said, don't know if this is my favorite, but it's the one that is the most iconic of the change those years represent. And he's right. I think he's absolutely right. That was, you know, we saw a lot of all of the faces of the franchise get traded away. But that Charlie was really the first huge change. I mean, you know, obviously I was upset to see Shane Victorino traded in 2012 when that started falling apart. But, you know, Charlie Manuel getting swapped out for Ryne Sandberg was really the beginning, the true beginning of the dark times of Phillies baseball in this past decade. And
God bless, man.
And it's great that Charlie's back at spring training as a guest instructor. Like, you know, it's, he's still
with Larry, Larry Boa. Great interview with, he did with, I think, Megan Montemurro. That was exceptional. Larry is a card. Using it for borrowing a phrase from my dad.
Well, we are presumably on the cusp. We're unavoidably on the cusp of another batch of Phillies memories, whether, you know, the quality of those memories yet to be determined. I think we can make pretty I'm doing it again. Now I have to start another identity and throw out another laptop. I can't afford to be this positive about the Phillies. I have to.
No, you can say it'll be a different type of memorable. Because it's true. It's a whole new crop of players. The expectations are different. So the memories and the, you know, the tone of the memories and the way, you know, the way that we start to remember this time, it's going to be a lot different than, you know, the hell we just endured for 7 years. I mean, it really, I think when we look back, we'll be happy we lived through it. It could have been a lot worse.
Yes.
I'm sure at the time I did not believe that, but now that I'm through it, I don't have to go back and do it again.
I can hear past, as quiet as a whisper, I can hear past me screaming at the top of his lungs about how wrong that statement is, because think of all the moments we just talked about. I said the name Jeff Francoeur pitching.
From August 2015, it's going, you're an idiot. I can't believe you're not going to remember how bad
acting
this
like
was.
Because we saw a couple of happy pictures, it was some kind of low-key golden age. Like, come on.
The golden age. We lived through it. You don't live through something like that. You survive it as a baseball fan. To stay engaged through so much shit is an accomplishment. It's a badge we should wear. It shouldn't be an exclusionary thing, but, you know, we'll be able to, we'll throw out names from that era for, you know, in 10 years we'll do it, and we'll, our brains will start bleeding and exploding because of the weirdness.
This is probably one of our happier podcasts, episodes of this podcast, frankly. Well, Liz, you mentioned there's a whole batch of new players, and that's certainly true. And there's some of them are so new that we can't stop talking about them. And that's meant that some other players aren't being discussed at all. And we've done a couple of hidden seasons. We've done a couple of episodes where we've talked about, all right, before the Bryce Harper signing, we were like, all right, let's just focus on the players who are on the team. Let's talk about some of the names we haven't been saying all winter long, your Odubel Herreras and your Cesar Hernandezes. And you know, we made sure to go back and talk about those guys because, if you know, they're crucial to this team's success as well. They're just not as fresh on the roster as some of the other names we've been mentioning so often. However, one name that hasn't been as prominent and certainly hasn't been discussed much was brought up the other day by Chris Towers of CBS Sports when he just mentioned offhandedly, does Scott Kingery exist anymore? And I thought that was an interesting point to bring up because, you know, does he? Because we've been bringing him up not a whole lot. I've mentioned his name a couple of times, but only as mentioning on the depth chart for the Phillies that three of their infield positions, Scott Kingery is listed as the backup, and that can't be the long-term solution. So, you know, it's just as a commentary on their bench depth being an area of need at the moment, that you know, Scott Kingery, as much as the Phillies claim he can play a bunch of different infield positions, he can't play them all at once, I would predict. So that's a testament to another need the Phillies might need to address in the short-term future. But at the same time, Scott Kingery, haven't heard a lot about him, haven't heard a lot from him. Yesterday, Andrew Simon of MLB.com wrote an article saying that that Lewis Brinson and Scott Kingery are both two players who hopes were high for, but then they wound up struggling as rookies. The conclusion being, don't count them out this year. He's not guaranteeing any sort of big resurgence or surgence, I guess, since they were rookies when they struggled. But at the same time, he's saying that these guys could still play a role. And you know, I said on another podcast that one key aspect of signing Bryce Harper, of trading for JT Realmuto, of bringing in Gene Segura, of Andrew McCutchen, like guys not only that people have heard of, but who put up great numbers last year, who look to be effective role players, who look to be, you know, central pieces to any success moving forward, is that it takes the pressure off players who maybe at one point were targeted as potential centerpieces, but wound up, you know, over the course of 2, 3, 4 years showing that, you know, maybe not. Maybe they could still play a role, but it's not going to be the role that they were groomed for. You know, I would say at this point, we don't even know if Rhys Hoskins can really be as reliable of an offensive asset as we've hoped. But then again, he's had, you know, one full season and change of Major League Baseball under his belt. So I was suggesting that perhaps having the Bryce Harpers to sort of, you know, Bryce Harper in particular, to take a lot of the heat, to take a lot of the pressure, maybe you see better years from guys like Odubel Herrera, from Michael Franco in particular. And I think that could also trickle down to Scott Kingery as well. As soon as we find out what his role is, which I think is going to be infield floater, wherever Gabe Kapler wants to put him, depending on what the matchups tell him. So I don't know. I mean, what do you think? Like, Scott Kingery, has he been a ghost this offseason for a reason? Has it been just because our focus has been elsewhere? And do you think that he's somebody that we could expect to see a bounce back from in the coming season?
Remember when I was so very torqued up about Scott Kingery?
We've been torqued up about a couple of different guys over the years. You know, I don't think anybody's going to blame you.
No, but it feels, I mean, now with Bryce Harper, it feels completely different because now, you know, like, my God, they're paying him all this. They put this contract together and he's just not doing it. He's just not doing what we want him to. And now it's like Bryce Harper at the end. Like, really, it's like the money that it's being spent on him. Like, it's amazing what putting competent people, like actual proven players on this team, does to take the pressure and the attention off of those guys, and to make it so that their success or failure isn't what the team is riding, you know, isn't what the team has to depend on. You know, it felt like that last year. It was like that, you know? It felt like someone had to do better, and it wasn't happening for anybody. So now there are so many more people who are more reliable to take that space. And, you know, if Kingery's going to be a highly paid floater, then that's what he's going to be, and I'm not going to worry about it anymore. You heard it here first. I am probably not going to stand by that for very long, but I'm going to try.
It does feel like you just don't have to. I mean, part of the reason we're talking about him is because we haven't heard about him. It does feel like you don't have to focus as much on the fact that Scott Kingery got a 6-year contract despite never playing on the major league level before last year. And that's part of the possibility that maybe the Phillies had stumbled upon this like phenom that had gone under the radar for a little bit. And, you know, Matt Klentak, I remember him saying, like, look, Scott forced our hand here. Like, he had such a great spring, we couldn't not do this. And I was like, there's guys, young players who have had hot springs before, and they did not get 6-year deals preemptively to playing a single major league inning. So, you know, there was a moment where I was like, is this our Juan Soto? Like, is this our guy? Is this going to be our NL East superstar that came up through our farm system? And we didn't really wind up with that guy on at least that level. And the Phillies used the assets that they had at hand, money, to bring in the talent that their farm system hadn't supplied. Now, look, I'm not saying that the Phillies have gone talentless here. They certainly have brought up players who can make an impact with this team, just not on the level that you can necessarily build around. I think there's a lot of supporting players on this team that we've seen so far. Maybe a couple of them, there's still time left for a couple of them to reach that next tier. But I think that's the reason they had to import a lot of the more elite talent that's on this team now. Like Scott Kingery, as Andrew Simon wrote, he chased so many pitches last year, and that was a problem all throughout this lineup, up and down. He struck out a lot. He didn't walk as much, which is, you know, a cardinal sin in this front office's playbook. He wasn't even hitting the ball that hard. As Simon writes that he had 31.1% hard hit rate, was well below the MLB average. So even the balls he hit weren't particularly effective. So I think that's the kind of thing that, inconsistency, lack of discipline, those are the kind of things that show this is a young team. That's the kind of thing that can be changed through experience and by having the pressure taken off of them. And I think those are two areas where the Phillies have improved for their young players this year. And you could see guys like Scott Kingery come out and see some improvement. The more I talk about it, the more I feel like this could be a really big, good year for Michael Franco. I mean, I think just the fact that they went away from Manny Machado alone is enough to like keep a smile on his face for the short-term future. Like his job might always be in jeopardy because he might never be a 300 hitter, but at the same time, maybe now's the time, you know. Like I wouldn't have blamed the Phillies for moving on from him at this point. He has been with the team for a while and he has yet to bloom into the player that they expected to see, but I feel like he's a prime candidate for exactly the kind of development I'm talking about. What do you think?
I would definitely agree. And I mean, he's got enough potential that they can continue to fill in other spots with, you know, guys like Gene Segura. He's great. He's going to add, you know, he's going to have a more consistent bat than Franco, which the Phillies definitely need. But, you know, you look to the future, like, I mean, what options are there that are better than Franco? I don't think the free agent market next year doesn't really have a lot. Like it was going to be Nolan Arenado, but he's locked up now for like the next 8 years.
You want to swipe Anthony Rendon? Really, really piss off more, or hear about why he isn't good from Nationals fans?
I mean, I completely forgot about him. That would be great. I just don't think he's going to come to the Phillies.
I don't think so either.
I don't think the Nationals will let him go, especially after letting go of Harper.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I just hope he likes deferred money.
With all these players the Phillies have brought in, they according to their own website, one of the first headlines you see is that this addition of this Harper guy has created a log jam in the outfield. And I loved the Gene Segura trade with Seattle that sent Carlos Santana and J.P. Crawford to the Mariners, because it cleared up the infield logjam to an extent by sending Crawford and letting Rhys Hoskins come back to first base. I loved how many problems the Phillies solved with one trade. So like being relieved of one logjam was like, yeah. And then they acquired McCutchen and Harper and you realize like, oh yeah, this team has a ton of outfielders now. And I love how they frame it like, oh, Harper and McCutchen create a logjam, as if Bryce Harper or even Andrew McCutchen are going to be like the odd man out in the Phillies outfield, as if there's like any threat of that happening. It of course is more impactful to guys like Nick Williams, guys like Aaron Altair, Roman Quinn. I feel like to a lesser extent, Odubel Herrera, but certainly this impacts him because he's had a rough run, not necessarily because of the numbers he's put up, but because of the numbers he hasn't put up because he had a hamstring injury. He's been battling the flu. It's been kind of a weird spring for Odubel Herrera. So Paul Boye just wrote on The Good Fight today that an article called "What Happens with the Rest of the Outfielders." And in addition to that, we also had someone write an article about the litany of right fielders between Jason Wirth and Bryce Harper who have played for the Phillies. And there's 43 different outfielders have taken that job on since Jason Wirth left the Phillies. And I used that article as an opportunity to go watch that Ben Francisco playoff home run. And then I had to check out because that was a lot. Dylan Cousins is mashing right now in the spring. So there's a bunch of outfielders down there. What's your take? Who do you think beyond Bryce Harper, who do you think is going to see a bunch of playing time for the Phillies in the outfield this year?
Probably. I mean, Andrew McCutchen, Odubel Herrera, but I think they like Nick Williams a lot. He had a great year last year, and there's no reason not to give him as many plate appearances as they can manage. You know, I like Andrew McCutchen a ton. I'm not necessarily convinced he might be good enough to keep out there all year long. You know,
I was under the impression he was being brought in as like a fourth outfielder kind of situation, but the more projected lineups I see and the more people talk, it's seemingly that he is pretty much a fixture, more or less, or as much as a fixture as you can be in Gabe Kapler's lineup.
Yeah, it seems like it. I mean, everything has changed since he was brought on. I mean, I guess, you know, it wouldn't have changed in the way that he would have been, you know, forced out. Now the addition of a huge outfielder means that he's back in, but it looks like maybe we all just misunderstood at the time. Like, I don't know.
All of us misunderstanding collectively. You must be mistaken. That doesn't happen. Yes. But when you look at it, I mean, you know, there's some drop off there. Like Nick Williams, yeah, is great. We saw a great, he was great bat off the bench last year for Gabe Kapler. Odubel Herrera, we've obviously seen him at a high level. But you know, Herrera tanked last year because of his issues. Nick Williams wasn't defensively, he didn't come through a whole, you know, very well. He's chasing a fly ball is always an adventure with Nick Williams. Roman Quinn always hurt. Aaron Altair hit under 200 for most of the year last year. And Dylan Cousins has always shown a lot of difficulty in hitting major league pitching. So there's a lot of outfielders, but would you call that depth?
No. I mean, it is sort of in that, you know, what are you really looking for in depth? Like, you, if they were competent players who could hit well, they wouldn't be depth.
Yeah, people say depth and it just seems like they mean other players, like additional players who also play the same position, and it's got to mean a little more than that, right? Because you can find some outfielders and just put them on your team, and if you're calling that depth, then it's just like, all right, this is better than forcing one of the relief pitchers to play out there, but at the same time, you know, there's got to be some effort put in, right?
I mean, I think in this case, it's the devil you know is, you know, better than the devil you don't. They know who these players are. Might as well keep them around for a little while longer. They did just spend a whole lot of money on Bryce Harper. I think they're probably trying to add somebody else. You know, why not keep these dudes? Because there are going to be other players out there that they can pick up.
Yeah.
I just hope it's not Jose Bautista.
No. I hope it's a while before we start the veteran available outfielder roulette game that
I hope they don't get there at all. They don't need to get there this year. Let's not have it, you know, they do that when it's garbage time and everyone's injured. You know, let's not have garbage time where they have to waste time. Every win matters. Every win counts. The NL East is going to – I'm just so excited for baseball to start. The National League is full of so many interesting battles. The American League can go screw. The National League is where it's
seriously
at.
Let's get that rivalry started again, or for the first time. I can't actually recall a time when the two leagues were – ancient enemies the way I thought they were when I was a child. But you know, and for every fault that I just assigned every potential outfielder on the Phillies, they each also have had strengths as well. Like there's also a reason they're still there. I look forward to the day when there is a Roman Quinn on the base paths or being inserted into a game where the Phillies are like, just, they just need a run to win. And like, he's pinch running for somebody on second base. Just like that. Man, I remember when the scouts were saying he was like a Billy Hamilton, but faster, and he could hit. And I remember thinking like, wow, so this guy's like the best baseball player of all time? Like, holy crap. And I look forward to the day where he is at full strength for a long time, and he's a fully operational weapon in Gabe Kapler's arsenal, because he's such an exciting player. And we can't go a couple of days without him injuring himself. And I know we make jokes about it because it does border on the ridiculous how often he does get injured. But man, like what an asset that his speed is. And the Phillies don't have a guy who has such like pure speed like that. And I feel like they haven't had a guy like that. I mean, Ben Revere was supposed to be that way, but he couldn't get on base half the time. So his speed kind of went neutralized. And all we had to show for it was like a 210 batting average. So I really hope this is also a good, I mean, you know, it's a Phillies podcast. We kind of hope it's a good year for all of the Phillies players, but you know, some of these guys who have really clearly have strengths that have gone untapped. I just want to see it happen. And I feel like this, you know, the vibes are good enough right now. The pressure is off some of them that it actually could. And that That would be pretty cool to see. But you know, if all else fails, we'll just scream at Bryce Harper about how much money he's making, because that was fun too. Some of my fondest Phillies memories are sitting in my Sunday home game season ticket in left field and listening to a guy scream $11 million, Burl, every time Pat Burl didn't do something magnificent. So.
And I hope that
the we're a real fun bunch here in Philadelphia. Tell your friends. Well, that'll do it for this episode of Continued Success. Liz, I mean, pretty soon we're going to be doing our first episode where we're documenting the 2009 season. We're going to be talking about spring training 2009. What sort of vibes the Phillies had that season? Spoiler alert, they were pretty good, because I don't know if you heard what happened in 2008, but you know, set the bar pretty high, and a lot of the same players were coming back. So we're going to be starting that component to this podcast very soon. And as well as this podcast, be sure to listen to Hidden Season with myself, Liz, and John Stolness on Sunday nights, as well as John's additional episode in the middle of the week, where he will interview baseball insiders from all across the sport. We've got a lot of really cool and fun stuff coming up in that vein. Also, stay tuned to The Good Fight, where plenty of more Phillies coverage is coming as spring training wraps up and the regular season begins. And, of course, The Dirty Inning. There's a new episode of The Dirty Inning, myself and Dr. Trevor Strunk. It's a podcast where we go back and look at some of the most laughable, hysterical, or stupid innings in Phillies history and just zoom in at a disgustingly close to some of these crazy innings. And in this latest episode, we look at an inning from a game that was played on September 6th, 1930, against the Brooklyn Robins, which the Phillies lost 22-8. And it is quite awful, but quite entertaining, I assure you. Liz, you want to give us the lowdown of anything happening at Yahoo Sports right now?
No, just kidding. We've got The Rush every day. We have a newsletter that goes out, Read and React. And it is great. My stories get featured. Since I work 5 days a week from 8 to 4, I sort of catch whatever major sports stories come in. I wrote about Bryce Harper a few times last week. It'll be great to actually start writing about baseball stuff again, because soon it will be the only big active sport, playing any regular games.
And some people act like that's the worst part of the sports calendar, but we, of course, know that it is the best when baseball gets your full, entire attention.
Come to Yahoo Sports for March Madness coverage, guys. We are on it.
Yes, if you haven't gone fully mad, go to Yahoo Sports for your March Madness coverage. Those of us who still have our sanity. Thank you for listening to Continued Success, and we will talk to you next time.